present the News Quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with an advertisement from the South Wales Echo, read by Charlotte Green.
Buckingham Palace, August the 16th, 20th and 25th. 2 days bed and breakfast from £69.50.
Youth of Cruet. Thank you, Basil Watkins of South Glamorgan, for sending us that. Now let's meet the teams. We'll be welcome first, on my right, Guardian columnist Francis Ween and writer, comedian Steve Punt. Facing them on my left, genius to the gentry Jeremy Hardy and television reporter and writer, the lovely Joan Bakewell. Before we start round one, here's an item spotted in the Blythe Bugle.
We recommend the Cricketers Hotel in Southwold. The food is excellent and the service is geared to avoid you getting indigestion and executed by local staff.
Well, thank you, Mr. and Mrs. Clegg of Suffolk, for sending us that. Francis, your turn for a question. First, of course, who laboured his holier-than-thou attitude?
It's that man, isn't it? Every story in the newspapers is about Tony Blair. Have you noticed this? Major, you never hear a word from him these days. Disappeared from the scene. Blair is going off to America. Blair this, Blair that. This was his Easter sermon. He's now replaced the Pope as well as replaced John Major. On Easter Sunday, he addressed the nation and said that God voted for Labour, or rather New Labour. He didn't like the old Labour stuff, the fire and brimstone bit. But New Labour, New Britain, New Heaven, New Earth. And this has offended some people who say they can find no evidence that God believed in a stakeholder society, whatever that may be. Tony Blair has a direct line to God, and poor old Major, yet again, is outflanked. And the Pope has been told to lose 2 stone. Have you seen that?
Tony Blair or God?
His dietary advisers have told him to lose 2 stone in weight, or else he can't compete with Blair.
What? This is Tony Blair's traditional Easter message to the Sunday Telegraph, in which he reaffirmed his faith in the cross and next time could we please put it next to the Labour candidate's name. Angry Tories responded that they were the true party of Christ, as in 17 years they succeeded in bringing the entire country to its knees. Steve, nice to have you with us again. Your question is this. Whose career moves border on the provocative?
Ah, well, I think this then is a foreign story. Korea is a country just about to have a general election in which the ruling party is due to be soundly beaten. So it's not such a foreign story. Korea is one of those countries which a group of builders at some point in the 20th century came along and said... These big old countries are a bit drafty. You could put a partition in here. You could make two nice, self-contained, smaller countries. And they've been banging on each other's wall ever since, saying, can you turn the communism down? And so and I think North Korea is threatening to do something to South Korea, probably involving nuclear missiles or something equally nice, I suspect.
Could well be. This refers to border tension between North and South Korea following an uneasy 43-year truce. News pictures show guards facing each other over the border with large dogs, so at least food rations haven't been affected yet. North Korea's President Kim ordered General Kim to be ready for war against South Korea's President Kim, who ordered General Yoon to change his name to Kim to avoid any confusion. Joan, how nice to have you with us. The question is this. How are the young turning away from the flock?
This is the flock of the Good Shepherd, I take it.
It is.
This is, therefore, an Easter story. It's very interesting. Every year now, we have a poll conducted by either the Archbishop of Canterbury or one of the churches that is meant to stem the hemorrhaging numbers of people leaving the church by demonstrating that 50% still believe. And then it's usually fairly unspecified what it is they do believe.
Yes. I think this poll was commissioned by that programme on Sunday nights, wasn't it? Heart of the Matter.
There was a little poll conducted by Ours was concerned with the resurrection, and a lot of Christians do believe in it, basically because it's the fundamental tenet of the church. So if you don't believe in it, you're in trouble, really.
See?
So when you say every so often these people commission these polls, you mean you commission them?
No, do you want to try again?
Give him hell, Joan.
If you don't mind my asking, I've got some questions here that I'd like to put to you. does 50% of you believe in the resurrection and 50% not?
Absolutely. Yes, like I thought this talk of the little poll meant the Pope. However. This is the news that a number of young people going to church has fallen by a third in the last 9 years. This week's return of Sheffield's controversial 9 o'clock service shows no sign of reversing the trend. God may move in mysterious ways, said one former churchgoer, but he can't dance to rave music. George Carey says it's important to bring the word back into youngsters' lives, and that Channel 4 should never have got rid of it in the...
It's always a bit worrying when the C of E starts trying to attract young people because they start getting the guitars and the tambourines and trying to gospel the whole thing up a bit, and you just have this unedifying spectacle of white people trying to clap in time.
Well done, Jeremy. Have a listen to this. This question is really taking a hell of a chance because it's all happening tonight, even as we speak. And your question is, who wasn't returned from Middle England?
I'm looking into the future now. It's a by-election thing, and somebody didn't get back in. And there's a Tory MP called Anthony Steen who's written a book telling you how to save your marginal constituency. And its acronym is TIPS, which stands for Tories in Pre-Election Suicide, I think. And he recommends all these things that that candidates should do to not lose elections. And there's a brilliant bit. He says he's written a document for an MP called Gary Waller. And in it, it says, when you're canvassing, walk up the middle of the road, but try not to be hit by a car. Because you've got to bear in mind that Tory candidates are the sort of people who can barely master the spoon, you know. So this is pretty essential information for them. But there's lovely stuff in there. He says it's Anthony Steenman. He says that Tory candidates should try and win over ethnic minorities, the disabled and single mothers, which is not really the Tories' natural constituency. I can't really imagine Tory candidates knocking on the doors of single mothers trying to elicit their support and saying, hello, I think you're a teenage slut who got pregnant just so you could get a council flat and you should have your benefit cut off. And I'm wondering if I can count on your support in the forthcoming election. But it's by-elections times and the Tories are facing massive wipeout. And indeed they should.
Quite right.
Because they're irredeemable vermin. Call me old-fashioned.
Lower than vermin. Thank God he wasn't controversial. This is the Tamworth by-election result. That was announced last Thursday. Or as we know it, later on tonight. A Conservative majority of 7,000 was overturned by a victorious Labour candidate.
I suspect this election's been rigged.
And the scores at the end of round one are, as they always are on the news quiz, for all. We'll start round two with a correction in the Campbelltown Courier.
Thanks to everyone who contacted us about the photograph on page 5 last week, which claimed to show Mr. Jim McCallum of Peninversands Holiday Park receiving an award from the Scottish Tourist Board. First of all, Mr. McCallum's first name is Eddie, and secondly, he wasn't in the photograph at all.
Thank you, Rory Stewart of Campbelltown, for spotting that. Francis, your question again. Whose sinking fund might be left in the red sea?
Well, you've lost me here. This isn't that Titanic story, I hope.
Well, it's not the Titanic, but something uncommonly like it.
The Russian fleet?
Cunard. No, no.
Cunard. Steve knows all about this. Only 1,500 people drowned in that, so it's a very good question, whatever it is.
Yeah, is it the Soviet Navy run out of money?
No, it isn't.
It's that some
pair of absolute
no,
dummies.
It's to do with Cunard, perhaps.
It is to do with Cunard. How bright you are. Quick off the mark.
The Royal Viking Sun hit a reef in the Red Sea.
Is that a crossword clue?
Yes.
I thought everything floated in the Red Sea.
That's a dead sea.
Oh, is it? Sorry, it's...
Thank goodness we've got someone with a religious background on the programme.
I thought it was...
If it had been Roy Hattersley, it'd been nothing but dogs and geese. I'm giving the points to Joan. Well done, Joan.
Right, too.
And I'll tell you two chaps, this is all about Cunard, who are being billed £16 million for the damage their liner did to a coral reef. Egypt is claiming the cash after the Royal Viking Sun ran aground in the Red Sea. The good news is that lower cabins now come with an ensuite jacuzzi. Canada is watching the case with interest and might put in a claim for damage done to one of their icebergs in 1912. Steve.
Is this a geography question?
It might be. The question is, where did extra whales blubber appear?
Oh, yes. This is to do with Princess Diana's cellulite.
Right.
Which is a type of wallpaper paste. And apparently she's got it on her legs, which is quite surprising. No, it's cellulite is, as all the tabloids told us, is a thing that makes your skin look a bit like orange peel. There was endless discussion in the papers about had she got it, hadn't she got it, was it trick of the light, or had she got it, and eventually the man from Del Monte, he say yes. quite what will happen now, I don't know. She denied that she got it, but she then left her club in a sort of... Sam Spade Mac, as if to say, no cellulite, but do you like the Mac?
She claimed she got it from, it was some sort of fungus that had grown on her when she sat on a bar stool or something, didn't she?
It was in her car, but her car's got
bad cow disease.
She's got one of those beaded seat covers and it had sort of done that.
Beaded seat covers? What kind of rubbish is this?
She's got a beaded seat cover made of oranges, which, or satsumas or something.
Of all the things you could accuse her of, I mean, cellulite is such a minor one. I mean, she's a social climbing, freeloading parasite. Who looks like a lunatic in interviews and is sending her children to boarding school so they can turn into the same sort of emotional cripples as their father. Then talks about what a great mother she is. And then people go and, you know, have a go at her for having fat legs. You work out with rugby players, you get fat legs, I suppose.
Jeremy, how much ado was more about Rome than Juliet?
Shakespeare, it appears, was a Roman Catholic. Or, as Ian Paisley would say, part of the pan-nationalist front determined to coerce the good loyal folk of Ulster into a united Ireland dominated by Popish knavery.
This playwright is the Antichrist.
He was a Catholic, seemingly. And the evidence for this is little bits and pieces that Shakespeare's supposed to have said, like, Jesus, Mary and Joseph, I forgot to go to confession. But people are always... always discovering things about Shakespeare. Some people say he's gay, some people say he's a Catholic, some people say he didn't write any of his plays, which makes it rather irrelevant whether he was gay or a Catholic. And what nobody's ever really drawn attention to is the fact that he was from the West Midlands, which puts a whole new slant on the way that one should read Shakespeare. Foy upon each foyage is an unweeded garden, the grouse to see. Things rank and grassy, nature and vicious moorland.
It is the theory that William Shakespeare was a Catholic and a communist who plotted to overthrow the monarchy by sending secret messages in his plays, that anyone who could put the words Merry Wives and Windsor together couldn't be all serious. And the scores at the end of round two have changed subtly, because Francis and Steve are six, but Jeremy and Joan have leapt into the lead with nine. Steve,
yeah.
Here's a piece of music for you.
Those magnificent men in their flying machines, they go up to the up, up, they go down to the up, down. They trample the ladies and steal all the scenes with their up to the up, up, and their down to the up, down. Up, up, down, flying around, looping the loop and defying the ground.
The question is, who's worried about more riff and less wrath?
Sorry, just before I attempt to answer that, I'm so intrigued by the thought that Shakespeare was from the West Midlands, because it does make me wonder when Macbeth's convictions are going to be found unsafe. This was... Sorry, to return to the question.
No.
See, there was a time when flying a plane was relatively simple. You got in it, and there's a throttle on one side and a machine gun on the other. And you pointed it down the runway, and you went up, and that was pretty much it, because it was quite simple. Whereas now, an RAF fighter is basically a computer with wings, and it takes a lot of time and effort. And for this reason, RAF personnel don't spend enough time ballroom dancing and holding fine conversation. Because when you're flying at low level with a night sight on through the desert at 1,500 miles an hour, 200 feet above the ground, you don't really want to chat about Shakespeare and stuff. But then now saying that they should have lessons in ballroom dancing and fine conversation for some reason. And they don't talk properly like what they used to, and they use too much slang, and they don't say things like ballywinko and stuff like that.
Exactly, they can't answer questions. That's one thing. They said when they're asked a question, all they say is yeah or okay. They can't speak proper English, unlike the old RAF people who used to say
like you can
Roger
say,
and Wilco. Useful English phrases like that.
Wizzo.
It also means that if they do all this endless ballroom dancing, when somebody comes over the radio while they're zooming along their Harrier jump jet and says, I don't know, Foxtrot Tango at 4 o'clock.
They think
they've been invited to a tea dance.
This is the RAF who are teaching their new officers etiquette and ballroom dancing to combat falling standards of social skills. Gone are the days when a young pilot had to learn the correct form of address for foreign dignitaries before he was allowed to drop bombs on them. Joan, why has the Home Office found most of its office has been taken home?
It really is extraordinary. I understand that you can get a horse box out of the Ministry of Defence with nobody noticing. This is about the filching of property from government offices.
Yes.
And a horse box went missing. I mean, how can you filch a horse box? I don't know. However, that's just one of the items, but £5 million worth a year.
You could have said it's a mobile home.
It's a mobile home. You could perhaps pretend it's a military installation of some kind.
It was a Home Office, I think, the horse box. Something else went from the Home Office, because Michael Howard used to have a priceless recollection that his father was an asylum seeker, and he appears to have lost this memory altogether now.
This is Whitehall, who have reported a 373% increase in thefts in the past 5 years, although they couldn't be precise about the figures. Someone had stolen their calculator. In the past 5 years, the Home Office has lost hundreds of computers, the Foreign Office has lost thousands of chairs, and Downing Street has lost all touch with reality. Jeremy, what was the good news for Galloping Gourmets?
Ah.
It's a West Midlands story.
This is one cut of meat that John Gumbel won't be forcing onto one of his children. It's horse. which is appearing in, I don't know, I think it, apparently it tastes a bit like donkey, but it's appearing in, it's appearing in butcher's shops because in fact, the butchers saw John Gummer on the news and they thought, horse's arse, there's an idea. So they're serving it up. Apparently it's rather gamey, and a friend of mine told me it has to be hung well, and the good thing about horses...
Don't encourage him.
Apparently, I'd like a piece of Son of War on which I lost £2 in the Grand... Broken down old nag. Had to choose it because my daughter wanted it because it had a pink jockey.
It is interesting that all of a sudden there's all this horse meat on the market 10 days after the Grand National. I do find
this is the news that a West Midlands butcher has started selling horse meat, or at least he's the first in the West Midlands to admit it. Meanwhile, next year's Grand National has been rescheduled for midday to simplify the catering arrangements. This year's race had 27 starters. Right, the scores at the end of round three are quite interesting because Francis and Steve have 10, but Jeremy and Joan have leapt into the lead with 13. Before we start the final round, here's an item spotted on CFAX.
Teesside Airport is set to tackle a wildlife problem after a plane was forced to make an emergency landing after hitting a deer. Measures to prevent a repeat crash are being considered. One possible solution is to move deer from the airfield.
Thank you, Cindy Winter of County Durham, for that. Francis, here's a piece of music for you. Calling occupants of interplanetary craft by the Carpenters ushers in this question. Why might we send the wrong signals by replying too soon?
Yet again, my colleague here is beaming messages through the ether.
If aliens contact us, Then you can't just rush out and reply straight back. You have to kind of check it with someone first.
That's right.
I don't know who it is. There's going to be like...
Michael Howard. The aliens registration office, and then he sends them home.
there's going to be some sort of official Earth reception committee. I mean, obviously not everyone can do it, because you have to have a massive radio telescope in the first place, but if you receive a message saying, hello Earth, you can't just zip straight back, hello Alpha Centauri. You have to phone up some organisation and say, what do I say now?
This is the recommendation for the United Nations not to reply immediately to any message sent by aliens. The UN have claimed a period of careful thought will be needed, especially if they landed in Westminster and demanded, take us to your leader. However, astronomers insist a swift reply is necessary to prevent misleading radio signals reaching the aliens. They might presume Earth couldn't support intelligent life if they tuned into Chris Evans.
I can't think of anything worse than referring a load of, you know, higher intelligent beings to a bunch of bureaucrats somewhere. It would be awful. They'd float down in their giant glowing mothership and there'd be someone saying, oh, you can't land there. I'm sorry. That's a restricted zone on a Thursday. Awful idea.
Joan, why is sorting out the mice from the men a weighty problem? Mice from men? Say no more.
Mice from men. And women? I mean, this is mice and men.
Yes, mice.
Oh, good. Can we do it?
Yes, you can do that.
This was... All right.
The chance to get back into the game.
A mouse says spotted leaving Chelsea Harbour Fitness Centre.
Right.
with distinct cellulite on his rear legs. And they've worked out... Well, actually, they've got some very fat mice. That's what it boils down to.
It is. They're tubby. Their official scientific name is tubby mice. And there's a long paper in Nature magazine this week which might help to explain middle-age spread in humans. I don't know why the mice are thought to be the same, but they've discovered that if they feed these mice on about 8 pints of bitter a day and an awful lot of pie and chips, they then turn into Kenneth Clark.
The discovery of mice that exhibit the same consequences of old age as humans do. They get fat, diabetic, and suffer hearing loss. Pardon? Scientists are waiting to see if they start to play bingo and form queues at the post office. Researchers say the mice could help with weight loss in humans, but only as part of a calorie-controlled diet. Jeremy, why are Japanese love affairs becoming virtually perfect?
This is cyber porn. Apparently, this is one of the stories that says everybody in Japan is doing this thing. Periodically, a newspaper runs a story saying everybody in Malaysia eats sideboards or something like that. And this week, the Guardian said all young men in Japan are doing what most young men do in the evening, locking themselves in their bedroom and damaging their eyesight. But, but in this case, they're damaging their eyesight through staring at computer screens all the time. They have virtual girlfriends. But all men through the world over make up girlfriends. I used to have a flatmate like that, and I'd say, so have you? And he'd say, well, you know, virtually. Everything but... Yes, it's a floppies story, isn't it?
This is the latest Japanese craze, virtual reality girlfriends. Men can have their own compliant and obedient lover in a game called the Princess Maker. Or they can have an exactly the opposite in a game called the Princess Diana. The idea is expected to catch on fast among businessmen who are used to treating computers like women. They choose the one that looks the best, sit it on their desk, and then spend all day trying to figure out how to turn it on. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis, have you brought a cutting?
This is from an obituary in the Daily Telegraph of Sir Hugh Mace, who was a former High Court judge. And it says, Mace sometimes seemed austere with a tendency to stand on ceremony. In 1973, he ordered the arrest of a man who had made a V sign at his passing car in Newcastle. The man spent 2 hours in the cells before Mace accepted his apology, together with his explanation that he had mistaken the judge for the mayor.
Steve.
This is a thing from a church in St. Albans, and they're obviously trying to attract young people back into the church, and they're doing it by misprinting their orders of service, because this one says, Sunday 21st at 6:30 p.m, Daniel von Ullman will be preaching at the Abbey Evensnog.
Joan, have you brought something of an intellectual nature for us?
A very serious item about local government in the Daily Telegraph. Parish councillors in a remote part of Wales have begun their first re-election campaign for at least 16 years with the unusual step of demanding anonymity. The council refused a request from the editor of the parish newsletter to reveal the identity of its members. The editor said, their first reaction was that they would have lots of telephone calls from people with problems if everyone knew who they were.
Jeremy.
This is from the National Portuguese Newspaper in English, which is a vital organ. And it is a small item titled Love's Labour Lost. The American Food and Drug Administration report the death of 4 New York men after they swallowed a purported aphrodisiac which included dried toad secretions. It was supposed to have been applied to the genitals, but the instructions were missing.
Well, that's it, more or less. Thank you all. Let's look at the final scores. It's been quite interesting because for a time, Jeremy and Joan were well in the lead, but Francis and Steve caught them up, and it finished up 15-all, so it's a draw. Well done, everyone. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Stafford Post, sent in by Patricia Baker of Stafford.
A New York Good Samaritan found a wallet containing $1,000 in Central Park and handed it back to the rightful owner. When he received a reward of only $1 for his troubles, the honest citizen pulled out a pistol and stole the wallet back.